Joe.
Hi.
So today we're back on Star Trek Prodigy, which I guess is what the most recent new Star Trek series at the time we record. And we are watching episode, I want to say, 8. Am I wrong?
It is episode 8, the rather cheekily titled Time Amok.
They do riff on classic Star Trek episode titles a bit.
Riff? They take the bloody piss, they do.
Yeah, yeah. So we've had Kobayashi. There's First Contact with a hyphen.
Unification number 3.
Oh, well, that's Discovery.
That was brilliant.
Yeah,
well, great. But it's Kurtzman Trek. I think it's Kurtzman Trek that kind of they stir the pot a little bit, you know.
Yeah. Well, this is a show that kind of introduces the Star Trek legacy to kids. And the last time we did an episode, we did episode 3. So that was the first regular episode. And I think that that was one of the things that we were charmed by, you know, that the kids in the show are being introduced to Star Trek at the same time as the audience are being introduced to it.
I mean, this is the first time it's being done specifically, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I would say, like, kids could happily watch TOS and early TNG as well. And, you know, there's nothing incredibly complicated going on with either of them. But this is the first time a show has been designed for children. Although, weirdly enough, I think this is more mature than early TNG and a lot of TOS as well. It's often the way, you know, when they write for kids, they write up.
Yeah.
And when they're writing for adults, they write down. You know, it's
I think writing up is exactly what's happening here. And we'll talk about that when we get into it. But I think it's very, very explicitly being a little bit more complex than you might expect from a kid's show.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There's two things I want to talk about before we go in, if that's all right.
Okay.
First thing is, watching this felt so explicitly 90s Trek to me, this episode. And I think this is the show. This is the Kurtzman show. Well, apart from Lower Decks, which is obviously set during that period, into that kind of adventures on a spaceship, you know.
Yeah,
Discovery is doing something a bit more mature. Picard's, I'm thinking of that as like the darker side of the Trek universe. Yeah. Jesus Christ, that second episode this year when it went off into a Nazi world with Picard as the dictator.
So good.
Actually, do you know what? The second series of Picard so far has been extraordinarily good. Like fan wank on a level you cannot believe.
So exciting.
Brilliant. And I really appreciate that about this, because you know me, I love 90s Trek. However, for the same reasons, I am going to complain about this particular episode, because I think it is mired in 90s Trek cliches, and it isn't really beyond the character stuff doing much that's ambitious with those ideas. So where does this rank for you in like all of the Kurtzman Treks?
It's not a must-see for me in the way that Picard and Discovery have been. So I will watch those, you know, within a day or so of a new episode coming out. I've watched all of Discovery season 4 at this point, and I will be avidly watching Picard. So it's not must-see TV in quite the same way, and I still haven't seen the finale, but I've seen all the episodes leading up to this, and I like it. I think it's really charming, and I think it does a good job of introducing Star Trek to a new audience, and it's visually stunning, like Kurtzman Trek always is, and I think the characters are incredibly likable.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, obviously, we watched episode 3 last time, didn't we?
Yeah.
And this is episode 8. And I haven't watched any of the ones in between. And clearly, a lot of stuff has gone down because they talk about it in this episode. Like, the shit hit the fan last week, by all accounts. And we're feeling the fallout in this episode. So this is actually more serialized than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, in fact, I think episodes 4 and 5 are basically one story, even though they have different titles. But there is often a reveal or something at the end of an episode to kind of bring you back the following week, and they do refer to things that happened in previous weeks. So I kind of like that, because one of the things about a kids show is, you know, the kind of kid who's going to get into Star Trek, I think, is going to be the kind of person who learns and really, really becomes familiar with the story of an entire season. I think those serialized elements really draw you in. Mm. And this is their Star Trek. This is Star Trek for a new generation of kids. And so there's things to know about it. And we kind of appreciate that as well, you know, knowing details of the story or details of the ship or relationships between characters and stuff. And this show wisely decides not to erase those at the end of the episode and then start completely afresh the following week. I think it's a good idea.
I think it's very telling that something you just said there, and that is, well, in order for Star Trek to continue, you need to bring in the next generation of like the viewing audience, you know. So the fact that they're doing this, I think, is a really smart move, because I don't know, you know, young kids can't watch Discovery and Picard, you know.
No.
They say fuck, and there's a lot of violence in it and things like that, you know. It is, that would be far too much, I think. Whereas here, we're ensuring that kids that are like 4 and 5 now. That sort of age.
They have a Star Trek.
Yeah.
And also 90s Star Trek is a bit talky and a bit old-fashioned looking, I think.
You have mentioned that a few times, yeah.
You know, but this introduces elements of 90s Trek over and over again. We have Kobayashi, an episode that's set on the Enterprise Bridge with like Odo and Uhura, which is
I haven't seen that episode yet.
Yeah.
It looks amazing. Isn't Beverly Crusher in there as well?
Beverly Crusher's there. So it is introducing Star Trek to a new generation. You can imagine a kid learning that there's an episode of original Star Trek called Amok Time. And then we go, wait, you know, that's just like Time Amok, this episode we're now about to watch.
Can I say something as a complete side note from both Prodigy and this episode? I'm going to be really indulgent. It's to recommend something to any Star Trek fan, and that is the Gates McFadden Investigates podcast, which I discovered this week and gobbled up. There's only about 13 episodes on there at the moment. I'm not sure she's doing any more. But essentially what it is Star Trek actors coming on and talking about their lives. They don't talk about Star Trek at all.
Right.
So it's people like Nanar Visitor, Brent Spiner, Robert Picardo, and they're talking about their families, their careers, their aspirations. If you're the sort of person that kind of likes the autobiographical side of the shows, check this out. It is absolutely gripping. Like, I've listened to every single episode in a week.
Wow.
And I will be dropping trivia as those actors appear. I've learned so much about those actors. So check out Gates McFadden Investigates. It's well worth a listen.
Brilliant.
And she is a fantastic interviewer. Like, very personable, huge, like massively likable, and just has a way of sharing the personal experiences of somebody's life in a way where the interviewer and the person being interviewed bond. It's really lovely. Wow.
Well, I look forward to you being a bit less mean about her in future episodes.
Oh, she's still a dreadful actress. Oh, she's awful. What a robot. But she has got a very good podcast.
All right. Should we get going?
Sorry, Gates. Sorry. You don't listen to this.
She'll never hear this. No.
Next season, she'll be like, I've been listening to this untitled Star Trek project.
That's right. They're horrible people.
I am not a robot, okay? All right.
I'm going to count us in.
I'm ready.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And we're off.
One of these days, I'll do the countdown. You know, everyone will get a terrible shock. This is a Nickelodeon production. It hasn't even hit Nickelodeon yet, I don't think, this show.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's just on Paramount Plus. I don't know. God, these titles are so good.
They are, and the music as well. It's like
it's really great.
It's really, and do you know what? I've only heard it a couple of times. I couldn't tell you what the Discovery theme is. Even I know it's good, but
I love the Discovery
theme. This is very memorable. It's very kind of, we're off on an adventure.
Yeah. No, it's got a sort of 90s thing. This is like, this is a bit like the Voyager titles. We must have said this last time, only a lot better, I guess.
Well, and I love that bit there, where the bit where it's Murph, and it bounces off what looks like liquid mercury.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, there's Gwen, I can't remember. There's Dreadnought. Yeah, so it's Michael Giacchino who did the original Star Trek, not the original Star Trek theme, the 2009 Star Trek theme and the music for that. But he doesn't do the incidental music. But again, you know, just the music for this show is really great.
I think that ship is sexy as hell, you know.
It's really good, isn't it? It's like,
it looks like an arrow or a javelin or something. Something that's kind of...
Yeah, whereas Voyager's like a toilet dessert bowl. Spoon.
No, toilet bowl. Yeah. My toilet looks a bit like Voyager, actually. Every time I go in there. What's Voyager doing in here?
Oh, okay. Stardate 60715 point something.
This was the first episode with a Stardate, I think. I was reading this earlier on Memory Alpha.
So now we know what year it's set in, but I can't do the maths right now. But
so we're in the Delta Quadrant, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, this is so adorable. And again, I think for us, you know, this puzzle that they have to solve is all just kind of terribly obvious.
It is, but it is the sort of thing that team building puzzle that they give kids to
the
do,
kids
isn't
would
it?
Know. Look at Rock cradling the fox.
I like Zero going backwards and forwards, really trying to figure all this out. You know? Yeah, I'm getting better with the names, aren't I?
Yeah. So the important thing here is this is a team building thing and it falls to bits. So they don't manage to do it because they can't work together.
It's really funny. Look, the fox gets away, chases the chicken.
Murph's in the boat floating off into the distance.
I'm sorry. I need to say this. Murph, MVP of Prodigy, every time he appears, it's hilarious. Whatever he does.
I love Rock because she is such a little girl. Like, she wants to pat the fox. She wants to hug Murph. Look at the holodeck.
There's a lovely scene in this, actually, where Rock has a breakdown and deletes, like, the Janeway hologram. And I thought the vocal performance was really strong.
Yeah. And she's a kid. She's, like, 10.
The I don't have another issue, though, her. That there's a character called Dow and there's a character called Rock. Well, have they plundered that episode of TNG? What's it called?
No, that's Dalrock, isn't it?
Oh, Dalrock. Yeah. No. I swear there's something called Dalrock, isn't it? Oh, no, that's that DS9 episode with the great cloud in the sky.
Yes.
And O'Brien has to tell the story.
That's right,
away.
The shaving cream, the CGI shaving cream that attacks the colony.
I thought the Tellarite had a little less to do in this one. He didn't have much to do, did he?
He is so funny, though. Holy crap. Because, you know, he's a well-known comic performer. He guested on The Good Place and Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's really great.
Every time we go back to this, the villain, oh, my God, what's that girl's name?
That's Gwyn's father.
Gwyn's father,
And this.
Oh, I like this.
This woman here. She is the Ferengi who brought Dal up. And so last episode, he discovered that she had sold him into slavery.
Why are the Ferengi in the Delta Quadrant?
Oh, I don't know. Who knows? She's just a trader or whatever. But
That's such a fannish question to ask, isn't it?
Yeah.
To stifle creativity.
Yeah. So, she's a terrible person, and now here she is betraying him to the diviner.
Every time we come back to these villains, though, and the robot, I get massive, like, Star Wars, Clone Wars vibes.
I think that's absolutely
visually
right.
It is borrowing a lot, isn't it?
Yeah. So this is super clever as well. They're too far away because we did a big giant jump of like 4,000 light years in a few seconds using the new Protostar drive that they have. Mm-hmm. And so the Diviner sends Dreadnought over to the ship, but as a pattern.
That's right. It's built by the replicator, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is very clever.
Yeah, the big shuttle replicator in the cargo bay.
Now look here, no good ever comes, all right, of these starships going into clouds full of electricity.
Don't go into a cloud. You remember that looks
when,
like that.
When Picard did that in TNG season one?
Yeah.
And then the whole bridge was full of electricity, wasn't it?
Yeah. Terrible. Yeah, it's like this is kind of like their first anomaly in a way.
Oh, God. Well, they had to get to one eventually, didn't they?
Yeah, but remember that we can't cooperate in order to get the things across the river. That all falls to pieces because no one's a leader and no one helps anyone. And now we get an anomaly that puts them all in different time streams where they're alone, but they obviously find a way to work together.
Yeah. I get that. On a character level, that is wonderful.
It's simple, but
no more simple than, you know, many other Star Trek episodes doing the same thing. I did think that the nuts and bolts of this story, the anomaly, shattering the ship, being in different times, we've seen all of this before, all of it.
Yeah.
And frankly, we've seen it done a bit better than this because it is boiled down quite simply.
Yeah. In fact, I think the explanation of it is really, really very well done. And it's because there are visual tools available to this show that aren't available to 90s Trek, for instance.
I think as well, they're just better at tying all this stuff into character. Yeah. Like back in 90s Trek, this would have just been, but this is a fun idea. Let's run with it, you know.
Oh, look, see, she was hiding there being sad and whimpering. So this is Rock's episode, I think. And
she said at the beginning, I don't want to be considered a security officer.
Yeah, because she's big. I thought that might have been picking up something from before, but I can't remember it. But I think... Yeah, she doesn't want to be the security officer. She wants to be something else, and she doesn't know what. And here she's kind of scared because she's on her own because she's obviously the youngest apart from Murph, although we'll probably find Murph is 500 years old or something.
Oh, my God, that would be amazing. There's so much to learn when we go to the Murph planet. I have a good question, and, you know, feel free to not answer this. How does a sentient rock come to be?
Oh, I don't know that she's a rock, is she? Is she a rock? I don't know.
She's clearly made out of rocks.
Think she looks like she's made out of rocks.
But okay, so you see this graphic here of the different ship. So there's a Voyager episode called Shattered in Series 7 where Chakotay, they go for an anomaly, the ship is shattered up into time zones and he skips from one to the other. And it is basically a really fabulous excuse for him to explore the last 7 seasons of Voyager just as the series is ducking out. I think that's a better episode than this. However, I do think this is like boiling down some big ideas in a very comprehensible way to children. And that's really, really good. You know, it's stimulating the imagination.
Yeah. But I also think too, the fact that the anomaly or what happens to the ship reflects what stage the crew are at. So they are all separate. It's like they're not operating together at all. And unless they can stop that, unless they can find a way to overcome that, they're not going to survive. And I think that's kind of cool.
I love what they do with Rock Talk at the end of this episode. They develop the character using this plot device. Like that's something that 90s Trek would never do because, you know, character development isn't their bag.
Well, and in particular, what they do to her is a very Star Trek thing. And I don't want to, I want to keep my powder dry until we get there.
Mm. Do you know the Kate Mulgrew's vocal performance?
Yeah.
I can't, I absolutely understand why they have made her look like Janeway of Voyager. Yeah,
classic Jane.
But all I can see is Jane, like Kate Mulgrew now, because the voice has aged a bit, you know? Yeah, yeah. I see the one that the Janeway doing fabulous anecdotes at a Voyager, you know, celebration convention.
So see this. So the graphic with the sort of sine wave thing explaining, and, you know, like it's kind of nonsense, but it's a very Star Trek-y explanation that's very well done. Mm. And the reason it's happening, I think, is to give Rock time to do the research that she does. And so she has to be slower than everyone else. And so they come up with this idea that they're faster and slower. And see, we're traveling along that sine wave.
I thought that was a lovely visual going along that sort of rainbow through the different characters.
And it doesn't correspond to anything that's happening.
No, but it absolutely tells you we're going from one character part to another.
And we're going along.
Gameway goes, we need a sophisticated scientist to rebuild the warp core. And then the camera cuts to Murph burping something up. Oh, I love that character so much.
He's so good.
Do you know what? I almost don't want to know much about
him.
Yeah, yeah.
I want him just to be a toddler.
What sex is it?
I think he's a him. I think he's a him.
It's the genitalous blob sex. It is.
Yeah, Rock calls him a him, so I think she would know.
But you know, I think they do have to be succinct in this because this is geared at kids. You can't really be ambiguous with the premise. Like, you have to be very specific about what's going on. But I think that's kind of good in a way. It means the writing's quite crisp.
Yeah. It doesn't waste any time. So, like, we're here with Dal, and Dal is a shit captain. He's lying in his quarters playing video games and doesn't even notice that everyone's gone. Mm. And it takes Janeway to sort of spur him into action. And that's a running theme, which I kind of like, because he's been our focus character since episode one. He is, in a way, the sort of star of the show. And seeing him develop from a kind of irresponsible and sort of shifty kid, you know, he's brought up by a horrible Ferengi who's kind of turns out mean to him. And, you know, he's been in this prison. And but he is smart and he's capable in all sorts of ways. Mm. And so Janeway has actually managed to give him a speech that has spurred him into action, and he does well. Like, he gets something happening. Look,
it's almost like a redemption arc of sorts, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I did think in the other episode we watched, he was in a similar place where he was like, "Oh, you know, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to step up to the plate and do this."
Yeah, and that's a thing that's going to happen. I think that's okay, though. I think
you need a character. If they're all on board, then where's the tension? You know,
and he can't turn it around immediately like that. That would be no good. Like, they can't throw that thread away.
But I think his character is probably the most obvious character. Whereas I think, like, Zero, there's lots to learn. Murph, there's lots to learn. Rock-Tok is just massively appealing. The Telluride is fucking hilarious.
I love him so much.
So whilst he's the lead, I don't know if he's the most interesting of all of them.
No.
Though, you know.
Yeah. It's a great performance, though. It really is.
I'll tell you what, the one thing that really stood out for this, and this is a bit of a complaint, is because obviously we watched the first two episodes, didn't we? And then we watched the third, which was like a character piece of them all finding the ship and kind of learning about each other. And I felt those first three episodes were really quite ambitious and doing new things, especially the first two. It really felt fresh. This felt very cliched and a bit unambitious to me.
Except, though, like, this thing with Dreadnought suddenly coming to get her, like each of them are in a world, it turns out, or a version of the ship that's kind of designed to get them doing their thing. And so it's telling that Dreadnought turns up in the portion of the ship that Gwyn is in because she knows him and he was sent by her father and so on.
That's what we did in the first episode when they got away from the planet. They all had to do their own thing to get away. In the second episode where
they all went through
a dangerous situation and they all had to... It's not, you know, I get it's all character building and it's definitely pushing the narrative of the season along.
Yeah.
But this felt to me very much like, okay, we've got a new set of regulars. Let's put Trek cliche number 17 in and see how they react to it. And every Star Trek show does this. None of them are immune, you know?
And I think they have to.
We'll see the anomaly episode. We'll probably see the time loop episode. You know, they'll do the works. But these characters are massively appealing. And so this is still hugely watchable. And like you said, visually, very impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that thing of getting Dreadnought there is so clever. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh, my God, that's, you know, like I would never have thought of that. It would never
occur to me that they would do that before?
Yeah. And he doesn't quite look like Dreadnought. He's not quite the same. It's not exactly him. And, in fact, he's got the same sort of colouring as the walls of the Protostar.
Like he reminds me of, you mean the Phantom Menace when they had all that robot army they were going up against on the planet?
Yeah.
That's what he looks like.
Yeah. But he's also got a kind of insect head thing happening, which is kind of cool.
That's the only parallels we'll be making with the Phantom Menace here, though.
I quite like the Phantom Menace.
Well, you would, wouldn't you? Honestly, I mean, bloody contrary. Yeah.
It's the best of the prequels, finally.
Excuse me. You've got in Phantom Menace, did you say it's the best of the prequels? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Each one gets worse than the previous one.
Revenge of the Sith's my favorite Star Wars film.
Dreadful.
Oh. Although, do you know what? It just goes to show, though, you know, because I've been told recently that Star Trek can't do comedy. I'm telling you now, Murph is a much better comic relief character than Jar Jar Binks.
Oh, easily. Yep. Less racist, the whole thing. And so each of them fails without the other. The best one is Jankenwick because he's in the fastest one, Pog, and he just explodes immediately. Dal gets to build the thing. Oh, here we are. Poor lonely.
I know. She uses the time, and she has a lot of time. How much time does she spend there?
Well, it doesn't tell us, but that, and like she's saying goodnight to everyone, and she's got a little stuffed Murph that she sleeps with.
That's so adorable.
Oh, I know.
I want one. I wonder if you can buy those.
And she's still eating the shitty food from the
Yeah, that's a running theme, isn't it?
Yeah. And she's just been there forever.
Well, no, because actually, on the Gates McFadden Investigates, Robert Picardo talks about his dad, right? And his dad was brought up in poverty and they couldn't afford proper bread. So he ate stale bread. And even when he became a very rich man, he still ate stale bread. No, but this is the same thing, isn't it? Yeah. She's used to the prison food and she doesn't want to...
Yeah.
Eat anything else.
It's sad though, isn't it? It's just terribly sad. She's so good. Oh, and Gwyn is being so sweet as well. Like their relationship. Do you remember the episode? Like she was locked up in the last episode. Rock came and brought her food.
Yeah. Despite the fact that role was reversed, wasn't it? She was the prisoner and she was the one in prison. Do you know, it shouldn't work at all, this, because they're all very likable. It should be very tedious.
But this, she is uncertain. She's unsure of herself. I can't. She keeps saying that she can't do it. Oh, and she's crying. Holy crap, that ship. Oh, and look how lonely she is. That ship.
And the ship.
That's a beautiful
shot. Yeah.
Holy crap. This ship, okay.
They love these shots where they're standing on the Starfleet symbol, don't they?
Yeah. Well, it's the theme of the show. But just the size of the spaces in this ship. So wonderful. And she's fixed it. Rock has fixed Janeway.
Do you know what? You know, I really love the fact that Janeway.
Look. Do you see the tally mark she's carved into the window? She's done it for each time she's tried to reboot Janeway and she's failed.
How many
and
was
so
there?
She's done it hundreds of times, but finally got it right. And
Is she grown up now? Is she a grown up by the end of the episode?
No. They're not going to change her to be a grown up, but she has been there for a long time.
Well, she teaches herself quantum mechanics stuff, and things, you know.
Yeah, it's so good. And the thing is, right, it valorizes science and knowledge and engineering and being a giant nerd and knowing stuff. That's something to aspire to. Yeah. And this episode is very geeky with its sine wave and it's weird. You know, like it just works on a level. They're all on their own and they're communicating with each other and whatever. But it is nerdy, and what she's done is she saved the ship because she's awesome.
But that's something that Star Trek has always done, hasn't it? It's promoted learning and being smart.
Well, except for Enterprise.
Oh, well, yeah. But it's basically, you know, like the geek wins, you know. And that is something to aspire to.
And there we go. We had the group hug. They're all hugging one another except Murph, who just fell from the ceiling and landed on.
He looks so happy, look, on the back. But I think that's really astonishing that now that character, Rock, can be used in a variety of different ways through this premise, in this sort of throwaway premise. 90s Trek would not do that.
No, brawn and brains, Jankum. He's so gorgeous.
I really want the episode for each of these characters, you know, to kind of like learn more about them. Like, you want to think, I think half the battle is if you want to be with those characters, isn't it? If you don't, you know, we said about Voyager, half the time we're like, well, if it's a Tom Paris episode, we're screwed, you know. Whereas any one of these characters, any one of them.
Hey, dud here.
Can I ask you a question about the Janeway hologram?
Yeah.
Because I'm a bit confused. Because she mentions about how the robot had come onto the ship and taken away her memory.
Yeah, yeah.
So she doesn't know who her original crew is.
She found out that her original crew was Captain Chakotay, and that's all we know. So the original captain of the Protostar was Chakotay, and we see Chakotay.
Oh, no. Chakotay. Talking to her.
Was handsome.
Is he handsome in this as a cartoon?
Yeah. It's actually a very, very good likeness of him.
Is Robert Beltran a fabulous voice performer?
Well, fortunately, he's only in it a little bit. And she does a zoom into the center of the picture, enhance, and then you can see Dreadnought kind of peering through the thing. So we do know that Dreadnought took over the ship, so there's some ongoing thing about that. I think.
Do we know if this is caught on with Kits?
I don't know. No, I don't know either.
I really hope so.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's properly sophisticated. This for children. I wouldn't say as an adult this is massively sophisticated, but it is for a child audience. This is a cut above the usual sort of diet that they're fed on Nickelodeon.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like, I think the kids' TV is often more sophisticated than we kind of give it credit for.
I don't know. I have seen some of the stuff they churn out on CBBC, and it can be pretty,
But this, you know, it is proper Star Trek. It's not like Star Trek the Animated Series, which is sort of super low effort.
Which we still haven't watched yet.
No.
So I couldn't possibly comment.
I've watched a couple of them.
Low effort, did you say? Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Really shoddy. And this is, I mean, this is a beautiful version of Star Trek, like a stunningly good-looking one, one that's well-acted. You know, it's got proper people in it, just incredibly solid characters and likable characters.
You remember I said in the last episode, the Herojin episode, about how I was a massive cynic and, you know, how I can't really buy into these Star Trek shows that are basically, you know, going with the premise that we can aspire to be better than all of this. Maybe if I'd had a show like this to watch at a pertinent age, I wouldn't feel like that, you know.
It is absolutely
we're pumping optimism into children.
But like the little girl tries really hard and spends a lot of time because she's lonely and she wants her friends back, and presumably she doesn't want to die in a warp core breach, and she solves the problem by being smart. And everyone's proud of her. It's so sweet.
But in the same breath, we've got a flying robot and a jelly and, you know, all those other fabulous things as well.
He's a Medusan.
Who, what? Zero?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what? I think that's a really appealing voice performance. I perk up every time I hear that voice.
He can do comedy too. He can deliver a funny line really well. I think he's great. There was a scene just now where he was sort of super enthusiastic because he'd worked out the time anomaly, and he kind of like heads straight towards Janeway, and Janeway's a little bit taken aback by his enthusiasm. It's just fun, you know. He's really good.
I mean, looking at Kurtzman Trek as a whole, and I tend to do this when we put, I tend to before shows or five now as a whole. Like, you know, I'm still not on board with Discovery. I'm just on board with Picard. I like Lower Decks, but I think I can take it or leave it. I'm properly on board with this. I will watch this through. Yeah. And that's probably my biggest surprise with Kurtzman Trek.
All right, it's time for us to choose our next episode. And I am on Untitled StarTrekProject.com/randomizer. And I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no unifying theme here. But I kind of want to do some 90s Trek that we haven't done too recently.
Okay.
And we're a bit Voyagered out, I think. So I am going to choose Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and Star Trek Enterprise.
Okay.
Does that sound all right?
Yeah. What, 90s Trek? Are you kidding me?
90s Trek. And the good 90s Trek and the mediocre 90s Trek. Actually, they're all both of those things, aren't they? All
right. Oh, they can be, yeah.
Yeah.
Push the button.
Okay, we have a Deep Space Nine.
Oh, God.
Blaze of Glory.
Oh, that's a terrific episode.
Isn't
properly, it's like the end of an arc. It's one that really goes into some like morally gray conversation between Eddington and Sisko.
Yeah.
And who's the villain of their relationship. Yeah. It's visually quite interesting because we're in the Badlands. There's a massacre in it. There's some action. Well, it's up to you.
I think we just do it. Why don't we just do it?
The first role.
I don't think
we've
ever done that before.
Jason Thompson will be turning in his grave. He said to me the other day, he did air quotes.
Random.
He went randomly selected. Yeah. Well, this one's for you, Jason. All right.
Listening to Untitled Star Trek Project with Joe Ford and Nathan Bottomley. You can find us online at UntitledStarTrekProject.com, where you can find links to our Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube channel. Our podcast artwork is by Kayla Ciceron, and the theme was composed by Cameron Lamb. This episode was recorded on the 24th of March 2022 and released on the 1st of April. We'll see you next time for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Blaze of Glory.